In a world gone mad, only rationality and common sense can save it. It's Andrew and Jerry Save the World with your hosts, Andrew Langer and Jerry Rogers. And now, here's Andrew and Jerry.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Andrew and Jerry Save the World, episode 78. Andrew and Jerry once again save the state of the union. The state of the... we'll talk about the state of the union in a second. I'm Andrew Langer.
Jerry Rogers.
And Jerry, the state of the union, angry, not as angry as Joe Biden is. I mean, you watched the speech. Your initial reactions to this?
Well, disappointed, because even though I disagree with the president, he's still the president of the United States. He still should hold to certain normal institutional standards, and he failed.
Yes.
The first 2 minutes of the speech, literally, you can go back and look at the ticker. Within 60 seconds, 90 seconds, he had labeled anyone who disagrees with him as a Confederate, Nazi, Putin lover.
Yes.
And he led with Ukraine.
By the way, I love that album. That was a Steely Dan album, right? Confederate, Nazi, Putin lover. Or was that a yes. Warren Zevon album?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I think it was Whitesnake. Whitesnake. But I think that it wasn't a unifying speech. It was a speech that was a campaign rally to his base. And also, again, leading with Ukraine, leading with January 6th. You know, and the irony there is that news broke this week that the J6 committee had destroyed evidence and information and video. And in fact, some of the testimony given by former Trump staffers turns out to be false testimony. And what's worse, there's now evidence that the president, former president Donald Trump, requested 10,000 National Guard troops. And that not only did he do that, not only did he suggest it, still the president of the United States says to you, we should have 10,000 troops. Let's make sure this is done. Maybe do it, unless you're baiting, unless you're hoping for something bad to happen.
Point, right? It's a situation in which Donald Trump was damned if he did and damned if he didn't, or damned if they did and damned if they didn't, because the other part of this narrative becomes, you know, somebody made a risk calculus. Here's why I come down to this. Sorry, the air conditioning kicked in here. Here's where I come down to this. Some Democrat made a risk calculus and they said, okay, we can have it. We got it both ways. Either we can reject Donald Trump's request for 10,000 troops and make it out. And if something bad goes down, then we can make it out like Donald Trump didn't ask for these troops. Or we can approve the request that Donald Trump made, or agree with the suggestion that Donald Trump made. We make Donald Trump out to be this white supremacist insurrectionist who wanted to bring the troops into DC in order to secure his illegal insurrection, but we run the risk of nothing happening because the National Guard troops are there. So maybe it's better for us if we don't bring in the troops, we lie about whether or not Donald Trump requested them, and bad stuff goes down. Right. I mean, because
but ultimately, right, think about what you're saying.
Yeah.
An honest person would then have to come to a conclusion that January 6th was a setup.
Well, right. 100%. Absolutely. This is where I'm going with this.
This is not to excuse the mob or those who were violent or those who exercised, as a riot. But the fact of the matter is, it didn't have to happen.
It's like an argument. Exactly. It's like an argument that I had with someone about Charlottesville in the summer of 2017, right? Which is a situation. Charlottesville did not have to happen, right? The rioting did not have to happen. You just go and you keep the idiot neo-Nazis away from the idiot Antifa folks. You keep them far, far away from each other. And guess what? You don't have a riot in the middle of Charlottesville where, you have, Antifa folks throwing urine and using prods and things to provoke other people. And you don't have some driving through driving through the crowd and killing somebody. But somebody made a calculus somewhere. You know something? We're not going to go down this road. And if stuff happens, well, we can go ahead and blame Trump and blame conservatives.
But you know what? Even,
and it's
even,
not to excuse right. the violence that that occurred. What I, because I don't. But the point is, there are things that could have been done to avert the violence.
Right. And again, I think.
Oh, by the way, Jerry, like clearing out the Lafayette Square before BLM protesters breached the White House fence.
Yeah. Wanting to do harm to the president.
Right.
And the president had to be hastily evacuated and put into a secure bunker. And by the way, the media at the time, this we're talking about the July 20th, the riots, the what, 120 riots, the burning of police stations and federal courthouses, the attack on the White House, the burning of a famous historic church. I mean, there were numerous dozens of deaths. There were 14,000 arrests over that summer, and no one calls it an insurrection. But I was going to make this point to you.
Please.
And that is the left has been offering up the bait for some time now. I mean, certainly since 2016, with the whole removal of statues, with the whole revising of history, the 1619 project,
right.
the rise of anti-racism. These are ways to provoke a response. And then when the response happens, you see the left is brilliant in the sense that they know that the media will not hold accountable their actions. So therefore, right. it's almost as if they can just do what they want.
It's a situation, right, in which protesters shut down the George Washington Parkway, or they shut down I-95 southbound in Virginia, or they shut down any of these places, and somebody goes out there because their kid needs to get to the hospital, or they just need to get to work, and they go and move them, and the person who moves them is made out to be the jerk and the instigator.
Well, I mean, just a very real case in New York City, where, by the way, the governor of New York is now saying she's bringing the National Guard into the New York City subway system. Now, mind you, Andrew and I are originally from New York. I grew up in the Bronx, and I grew up in the Bronx during the bad old days, 1977 blackouts and riots, high crime. Ford to city, you know, whatever, to hell with you. But my point is that never did we bring the National Guard into the subways.
Right.
Now the Democrat governor of New York is doing so because Democrat prosecutors won't allow the police to do their job and won't hold criminals accountable. But the point is this, the Democrats, again, they create a circumstance where you have to come in with a heavy presence, a heavy foot.
Right.
You know, and this is.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, and again, we're not holding criminals accountable.
Jerry, this is Marxist dialectic at its core. This is, you know, we talk about Rules for Radicals, book that was written. What's the guy's name who wrote the rules? Doesn't matter.
Saul Alinsky.
I almost said Saul Alinsky. My apologies to Saul Alinsky.
60 plus.
Saul Alinsky. But Alinsky was only writing what Marx had talked about, and then later on Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky all talked about during the Russian Revolution, which is this idea of you synthesize the solution by creating conflict. And that's what you go down. Listen, I don't want to get a far field from this.
But let me just make this last point about this, and that is and how they create this problem, and normal Americans, law-abiding citizens, are forced to protect themselves or take the law into their own hands or protect their neighbors, and then they get held accountable. So again, the New York City subway system, so dangerous that a Democrat governor is now bringing in the National Guard. Just months ago, a veteran was on the subway, and there was a lunatic attacking passengers. He defended those on the train. And had a physical confrontation with this lunatic, and he's being held accountable.
Right.
But the thousands and thousands of criminals invading and doing great damage to our cities, the police are letting them run wild. Look,
right.
Just two more points. Saw an interview yesterday where guys online, in a pharmacy in New York City, online to buy whatever he's purchasing, and he sees over here. It was a store, and there's a guy loading up a beer onto a dolly, and he thinks, oh, it's just a guy doing his job. No, it was a guy stealing beer.
Oh my!
And he rolled out with all the beer, and he's online like a bot waiting to pay for his items. Right. And he says to the store manager and to the clerk, why did you let that person go? And they said, well, because the police won't come if it's a theft of under $1,000.
We have to come back. We have to come back to the state.
But that's, I mean, that is.
But Jerry, no, this is my point, is that dovetails immediately into the story about what's going on in Pittsburgh.
Yes. We'll say it now. Yeah. You know, I called you in the middle of the day about this news in Pittsburgh, a major city where from 3 a.m.
to 7 a.m.
they will not have anyone at police stations.
Right.
That emergencies will have to be directed to call boxes. And that if you call the police and it's a non-violent non-emergency crime.
If you're a
burglary,
and someone pulls up and loads up, cases of beer on a dolly, and
police won't come.
The police will not come.
Yeah.
So what good is it to? And it gets into Jerry what we were talking about the other day, which is this idea of if crime is no longer considered criminal and nobody is charged in it,
and crime comes down,
crime statistic and crime goes down.
And I think about this all the time because, you know, you and I have done some work in Baltimore City, and I know for a fact, you know, I hate that expression. I know for a fact. I know. Trust me, it is a fact because I know it, that in Baltimore City, property crime is so rampant that people don't call the cops anymore.
Right.
So
what's the point?
Yeah. So what's the point? And so if you have a UPS delivery or an Amazon delivery and someone steals it from your front porch or your mailbox or your vestibule in your apartment building, guess what? It's just lost.
And
it's gone.
Yeah, and by the way, it kind of obviates the need for all those Ring cameras, you know?
Yeah. But this is the state of affairs. And it goes back to the state of the union. This is the state of the union is that we have a president untethered from the law. We have prosecutors who are untethered from the law, who refuse to enforce the law. We have a Department of Justice that is using lawfare to destroy democracy in order to protect democracy. We have violence where everyday average Americans don't know what to do. Because if, God forbid, you are not, again, we're living in the age of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. So if you're the wrong ethnicity, and you defend yourself against the right ethnicity, well, guess what? You're the one who's going to be held accountable.
Right.
Look, this video went viral this week of a young white girl being beaten and bludgeoned and her head cracked against the concrete. And it's an African-American young girl who did this to her. If you reverse the races, 100%. We'd be marching. I think it happened in St. Louis. There'd be marches. The president would be in St. Louis. But because it's the wrong ethnicity was attacked and put into the hospital, it's a local story.
Well, let's go back to the State of the Union itself, because I want to come back to giving you my impressions of the beginning of it. But let's talk specifically for a moment about the Lake and Riley segment of it. And I know you and I both agree that perhaps Madame Taylor Greene might have been a little bit too
she's a ridiculous person. We criticize Biden. She is a ridiculous person.
Agreed.
Who ruins the public discourse, because instead of talking about immigration and Lake and Riley and the president's disregard, instead we're talking about this clown, this woman who's a clown, who looks like a circus entertainer. She gobbles up the conversation.
But let's add to this the fact that she also stepped on Biden's ability to make himself look ridiculous here. The point is, though, you know, the provocation did get Joe Biden to react and actually try to say Laken Riley's name. Of course, he butchered it and called her Lincoln Riley. And talked about the illegal immigrant who allegedly murdered her. I think we all know that the illegal immigrant did in fact kill her.
And then he had the bizarre ending of that comment where he kind of slurred out that thousands are killed by legals.
By legals.
Like,
yes,
what a bizarre thing to say
as well.
Yeah.
But then the point is that the president then goes on TV and apologizes. So the White House is saying that he didn't apologize, right? He says he regrets using the word illegal, but he didn't actually apologize for it, which is, you know, then why do you go on and talk about this if it's not an actual apology?
But again, this is the whole, like, the economy is doing so well, even though inflation through the last 3 years is up 17%, even though household goods are up 30%. My point is, he did apologize.
Yes.
Because you don't regret something unless you're sorry for it.
My point is to your point,
Orwellian,
getting the ethnicities reversed. If this had been a legal, you know, who had killed an illegal immigrant, the president would be all over this, and this would be some excuse for all kinds of pandering here. But
you know,
we now live in a bizarre situation in which the president finally is provoked. He attempts to do the right thing. He butchers it. But, you know, he then goes on and has to do an apology tour on major media because he dared use the wrong term in, you know, because of progressives. Oh, and by the way, it also shows you how much power the Ayanna Pressleys of the world have, that they're able to get also a clown, but they're able to get the president to go and apologize for actually speaking a little bit of truth.
I know, you know, we've talked about this, how no person in their right mind can support Joe Biden, that Donald Trump is the only choice. But then again, Donald Trump often behaves like Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Right.
He just this week was at a rally and he ranted. He also slurred his speech. He made inappropriate comments. I just don't understand why, even now with so much at stake, it's not just about Donald Trump. It's not just about him getting back at his political enemies who have tortured him with lawfare over the last couple of years. But the fact of the matter is, the country's on the brink. And again, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, but he is an unserious person.
But so this gets into, you know, again, you know, where we are as a party and or where the Republicans are as a party. Let me go back. I want to go back to the speech for itself, because obviously I watched it. It's funny. I was on with John Justice yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 12th. And I had someone tweet accusing me of not actually having listened to the speech, because I said on the air, rightly so, that it was an angry speech. Joe Biden was angry. He was not the happy warrior that we've
No, we because he about. Was he had a cocktail of Adderall and whatever else. And again, one of the symptoms of these kind of cocktails is a rapid response. Remember, he sounded like an auctioneer at times, at times. And the kind of the anger is, these are telltale signs of being drugged up. The president was medicated in order to speak for 60 minutes.
And we knew that was going to be the case. And more to the point, to make the long walk in and to spend 20 minutes glad handing.
Well, at the end, he literally, I think, was lost.
Yes.
Again, if you watched it, go back and watch the clips of the end. He doesn't know where to go to get out of the chamber. So the Adderall, after an hour, it wore off.
Now, call me a purist, right? But I know what the whole point of not just a State of the Union speech, but a televised State of the Union speech is supposed to be. It is supposed to be a speech that talks about the president's accomplishments of and the administration's accomplishments of the prior year, to report to Congress, here's what we've done in the last year, and here's what we plan on doing in the coming year. That's the purpose of the State of the Union. And it's also supposed to try to, in some ways, bring us together or bring more people to the table than before. And the president comes out there and he gets to the democracy stuff really it's like the first thing after he starts talking about Ukraine. Like, he does a little tip of the hat to the State of the Union, but then he immediately goes into a discussion of what's going on in a foreign country and why it's important for Congress to sit down and pass a bill to fund Ukraine. And then not Ukraine and Israel, and not talking about the Israeli plight and what's going on there. Oh, and by the way, we now understand this week that Hamas has actually lost many of the hostages that they took. They don't know where they are. But the president goes and he starts off by talking about this conflict in a foreign land that we're just really sending money and materiel to. We don't have any troops on the ground. I can understand it if he started off the State of the Union talking about, you know, American troops on the ground, Persian Gulf, or, you know, if he were Nixon or Johnson talking about.
Well, can I just comment on that real quick? Because you make a good point. And you and I were two of the first, you know, center right.
100%.
Voices that said, go get Putin. Right. This is unacceptable. But I said in those early days that the U.S. should consider troops on the ground.
Yes.
And here's why I say that. You can't guilt the American people or tell the GOP, those who are leery of war and spending more money. You can't guilt them, shame them. When you're talking like we're going to do all we can.
Yes.
No troops on the ground.
Yes.
Right.
We're going to do all we can.
Except
no ramping up oil production to bottom out the
right. Russian it's oil such economy. Nonsense.
We're going to do all we can on sanctions. Except here are other sanctions that we can consider before.
So like everything else, this administration has botched the Ukraine aid.
Right.
And so now Congress wants, or some in Congress want to hold him somewhat accountable. But we can't even have that discussion.
Hey, and
he has botched everything, this guy.
By the way, you know, when you don't put troops on the ground, you know, when they've already invaded the country, you put them on the ground when they're threatening the invasion 8 years ago. Or at this point,
somebody in this room recommended. We ought to be putting our troops at greater numbers, our capacity in NATO countries
right now.
Poland, we should have a huge presence in Poland, and these Democrats like to say red line. You know, Obama of course did it with Syria.
They were so used to it during the first part of the 20th century.
They're so used to not being held accountable by the American press that they don't think foreign leaders will hold them accountable. Of course, Obama did it, and then we saw that Putin went into Ukraine, although it was, you know, different scenarios. He was talking about Syria, Obama, but did nothing. This president is using the red line metaphor again, but this time it's against Israel.
Right. I want to get to putting a port in Gaza.
Let me say this too, just so I get it out. This was the most anti-Israeli, therefore anti-Semitic, State of the Union in our nation's history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joe Biden and the Democrats hate Israel, and I'm going to say this, and therefore hate Jews.
But let me go down. Let me.
You can't be anti-Israel and not be anti-Jew.
Different tack on this, because I think in his heart of hearts, Joe Biden is pro-Israel. I think he's pro-Jew. What I think the problem is that he and his team are so hard set about winning Michigan and winning Minnesota that they don't want to anger the Islamic population.
So you undermine the Israelis from everyone knows.
Hold on, because you raise a really good point. Something that came up last week while our friend Tony Katz was in Israel. There was this story that broke last week about the vice president sitting down with Benny Gantz, who was one of Netanyahu's former deputies. He's now left the cabinet and is incredibly critical. I guess he may still be in the cabinet in a very junior position, but he's been openly critical of Netanyahu. And, you know, part of why, you know, Harris met with him was so that they could sort of talk about her moderating her rhetoric. But really what it was about was meeting with him to start the narrative of giving cover to the administration so that they can start openly criticizing Netanyahu and Netanyahu's conflict with war. Now, that being said, there are a lot of Israelis who are very critical of the failures of the Netanyahu administration to not catch these signs. and how they're conducting the
but
war.
But that's again, but that's over. Like, and that's an internal political debate. Sure. This administration over the past week and since the State of the Union has been asking openly their allies in Israel, their political allies. I want to comment on this for a second.
Yeah.
How can they disrupt the Netanyahu government?
Right.
Think about how ugly and political that is. Our ally is in the middle of a war.
Yes.
And the president of the United States and his Democratic allies in Congress, like Bernie Sanders and like Elizabeth Warren and like the vice president, Kamala Harris, they care more about disrupting what they call a right-wing government. And they even get that wrong, Andrew. This is a coalition government.
Right.
This is not a right-wing government. This is a coalition government.
But Jerry,
they lie to us all the time. Also, they lie to us about everything.
Here's the thing, to put it in an important context, this would be like the pro-German sentiments in America, the Charles Lindberghs of the world, and the isolationists in the American government and in the American political system in the early days of World War One. In fact, World War Two. In fact, let's say between 1939 and 1941, these interests, you know, getting the president to say that the British government needs to change to a more German-friendly regime, as opposed to what Germany wound up doing or what England wound up doing. I mean, you know, England in the midst of fighting a war, obviously they need to change the government to become stronger, not weaker. This would have been like the United States encouraging Chamberlain or whomever else to stay in power, replacing him with someone, you know, more peace-loving, which gives the German cause. I mean, here's the other thing that gets me is that on the day of the speech, you talk about this. They just met with Benny Gantz. They've started to be critical of the Netanyahu government. And then what does the Biden administration do? They say, they announce on the day of the speech and in the speech, oh, we're going to build a port in Gaza to start ferrying in supplies.
And by the way,
yes,
right where they're going to build that port is it northern or southern Gaza?
I don't know.
Well, it's on the border of Egypt is where they're going to build this thing.
Then that would be southern.
All right. You know, Egypt is right there.
Yeah.
You know that Egypt has ports.
Yes.
And infrastructure. The problem that no one talks about is that Egypt won't open its border walls.
Right.
Egypt has a border wall that is like the Walking Dead,
yeah,
where they have these wall after wall after wall to keep the Palestinians out.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why the United States is going to have to build a infrastructure when you have numerous dozens of Arab and Muslim nations with working infrastructure and ports
if the Chinese aren't building a port there, you know, then clearly there's something wrong because the Chinese are building ports everywhere.
And again, for the record, so we're clear on this, the war could end immediately.
Right.
If Hamas surrenders.
Right. Well, yes, except they also.
So the question is. Of course. Well, obviously, if Hamas surrenders, whomever is left, the hostages are released. But the fact of the matter is that you never hear this.
Right.
What does Joe Biden want to do? Does Joe Biden want Hamas to survive? It can't.
Yes.
Hamas has to go. Like, there's no like.
But again, this gets into this is the problem of your goals being dictated by your political interests. So,
but Joe think Biden about how ugly that is. Because of Michigan, yes, of course, we're going to turn our backs on Israel.
Jerry, I mean, you know, we talk about this. I am going to bring in the conspiracy theory, and I'm going to shift gears entirely. Have you followed this story about the Boeing engineer?
He was found dead.
Right after giving testimony.
But we don't know anything about that, though.
We don't, but on the other hand,
so now we sound like kooks. Be careful. I don't want to go there. We can't go there. But we can go here, though. And that is, what did Joe Biden trying to get out of the chamber, the House chamber, said to a couple senators I need to have a what? A come to Jesus meeting.
Yes.
With the Jewish prime minister.
Yes.
Again, imagine if Trump had said that.
Or George W. Bush, I think is
a, it would have been headlines. Right. He would have. I say that because there is a growing sense in the Fourth Estate that censorship and canceling out speech is a good thing.
Right.
And this is a dangerous rising tide among the media.
Yes.
Because they don't hold accountable politicians.
Right.
But what's worse than that is ultimately going to end up with the stifling of ideas and public discussion.
Which is why that's a perfect segue, Jerry, into the next section of the speech, right? Because Biden starts off this state of the American Union talking about Ukraine. And then immediately he says that, you know, he starts with what was a primary talking point last week in the days leading up to the speech. This election is about democracy being under threat. J6, J6, J6.
Yeah.
We need to come together as a nation. And then he spends time demagoguing his opposition. You know, that was the next angry part of this speech, which gets into what you said earlier about this issue of if you're not X, Y, and Z with me, then you are a Confederate, you are an insurrectionist, you're this, that, and the other thing.
I went through, yeah, Andrew, line by line. I listened to the speech, unfortunately, not live. I listened to it later. I can't do these things live anymore. But I also read the speech.
Yes.
And then I also read the speech as he gave it. You see what I'm saying? So I read, and so reading it as he gave it was interesting insofar as you could actually fact check.
Yes.
Now, to its credit, the New York Times did fact check this speech. And almost everything he said on the deficit, on Republicans wanting to cut Social Security, you name it, interest rate. The New York Times did not give him a true on anything.
Yes.
Because he lied about everything.
Right.
He said that unemployment is the lowest it's been in 40 years. No, it's not. Unemployment ticked up in February to 3.9%.
Yes.
In 2020, in the beginning of COVID, our unemployment rate was only 3.6%.
Right.
I mean, so not only is it not the lowest in 40 years, it's not the lowest in the last 4 years.
And I know I'm not supposed to do math on the air, but these are not insignificant numbers, because when you're talking about one tenth of 1%, you know, 1% of, we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of people out of work, hundreds of thousands of people.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. And also the fact of the matter is, you know, he's, and again, I wish the media would fact check him. He says that he said the largest job revival in America's history. Well, no.
Also not true.
Number one, the rehiring after COVID began during the Trump administration.
Right.
Number one. Number two, the vast majority of these new jobs aren't new jobs. It was simply people going back to work after being fired, essentially, by the government.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, we also have a hard time with these numbers, because every time they put out a jobs number per month.
Oh, this is a strategy, by the way.
They then revise it downward the next month.
So what happened was, in February, we got a surprisingly strong jobs report where the economy added 275,000 new jobs. Oh, but January and December had to be recalculated downward.
Yes.
Which is why unemployment ticked up.
Yes.
But here's the irony. I didn't see any big headlines on, question mark, unemployment up, employment up.
Right. That's the thing.
But I mean, we know why.
Right? It's a strategy.
Also, yeah, because if every month you play games with labor statistics.
Yes.
So you get a end of the month or beginning of the month bump. Then you have to go back. Look, inflation ticked up. Unemployment ticked up.
Right.
Gas prices ticked up. everything, Andrew, correct me, I want to be wrong. Everything's going in the wrong direction.
See, and that's the thing. And the speech was all about, and it demonstrated that the president is there's something very, very wrong here. And my point that where I wanted to go with this, Jerry, real quick, because I've been talking quite a bit about this and about how the media is saying X and the American public sees Y. There's this discrepancy. And I know, and I'm going to say this, I know he's not a conservative. I'm not trying to offer him up as a conservative, but, you know, when you get comedians, progressive comedians talking about this, then you know there's something going on. I want to play this. This is Dana Carvey on his recent, his new podcast, Superfly. Here he is talking about this issue of something being wrong with Biden. Here we go. I want to do this. Let me play this.
I started with Biden because the border's all the rage now. Everyone's crazy for the border. Mm-hmm. So I did Biden 3 years ago, and he's at a press conference, you know. Mr. President, do you have any idea of how you're going to handle the crisis at the border? And Biden's like, first of all, let's get our facts straight. There's no crisis at the border. Come on. And he goes, how do you know, sir? He goes, because it says so on the piece of paper. Come on. It says on the paper. This is a paper right there. And then recently, everyone wants to close the border. Everyone's screaming. Biden's up there. I'll close the border harder than anyone's ever closed the border. I know how to close borders. Come on, Jack. And the press is like, but last time, get your facts straight. I beat you the hell out of you. Will your dog pay some phone on his shoulder? Come on. Let's do some push-ups. I'll close the border like nobody's ever closed it. The border patrol, the border can't believe it's not butter.
That's a good ending.
I mean, you know, when you've
lost, it was great.
When you've lost Dana Carvey, Gary, I mean, that says something. It's like the Supreme Court decision.
Well, it's not just Dana Carvey too. I mean, you're starting to see, and this is, I mean, you know, I'm critical of the traditional media for, and I want them to come back. Right. We need the media, but the Joe Rogans, the podcasters. But here's the trap we can fall into, and that is, well, we think we're winning. Well, we think we're having it. We're not having an impact. We're not. The left controls the public school system.
Okay.
The left controls Hollywood. You had the Oscars and the what was the movie? The Zone of Interest.
Yes.
Where you had the director or creator of that movie on TV, a movie about how normal, so-called normal Germans could brutalize Jews during the day and then go next door to the little camp where they're with their houses and their flower pots.
The banality of evil. Yes.
Right. And as he's receiving an Academy Award, he promotes Hamas. Yes. In my mind, promotes Hamas. You know, someone wrote this. I won't take credit for this, but there's a new phenomenon in Hollywood, in the media, and it's the as a Jew, anti-Semitism.
Right, of course. Yes.
You know, as a Jew, I think yes. But the thing is that it's outrageous.
I Jerry, I had someone, you know, I don't know, I did a hit on a radio show out of California, and I got some random email on Thursday night during the speech. Some anti-Semite from Southern California starts ringing me up and starts sending me quotes from Jews who are anti-Zionist. I'm like, okay, I get it. There are Jews, there are Orthodox Jews who are anti-Zionist, and some of them have religious reasons, and some of them it's political. But my point in playing the Dana Carvey thing is that not to show that you know we're winning or losing Hollywood. My point is that there are folks who are recognizing that this emperor has no clothes. And they are, some of them are stepping up and actually saying something about it. That's important because when we get into this election season, you know that there are the 30% of the electorate who will vote for Donald Trump no matter what. You know that there's the 30% that will vote for Joe Biden no matter what. And then there is this independent middle, and it's a portion of the middle. It's small chunks here and there that are going to sway this election. 40,000 votes across six states. That's the way it was in 2020. And so some of this has to be focused on making sure that the folks who are saying that there's something wrong with Joe Biden, that they understand that there are other people who are saying that there's something wrong with Joe Biden. So if it's a handful of folks who look at this and says, oh my God, Dana Carvey, you know, makes fun of Joe Biden because of this issue, and oh my God, he's right, there's something really wrong here, then maybe I'm not so crazy. Maybe there is something, maybe I don't have to vote for Joe Biden. I could vote for somebody else.
Well, I see your point, but still it's, and you and I work, you know, in and around DC and New York, and we're around members of Congress and think tankers and policy experts. And there still is this problem where people shout out their support for Biden, right? They there's no shame in it. They will broadcast it. No one shouts out their support for Donald Trump. No
That's
one
not
does.
True, Jerry. I attended a big conference which had tens of thousands of people who were shouting out.
I understand that, but that's home field. That's Yankee Stadium in the World Series when the Yankees are playing. I'm talking about. I was at two events this past week: salon dinner with media and another event. And people came to me on the side and said, "I'm voting for Donald Trump."
But Jerry, how much of that is what you and I have talked about? There's a difference between being inside the bubble and the folks who want to engender themselves, right? It's one thing to come up to you and say, you know, privately, I'm gonna vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah,
but it's another thing to sort of be out there and say, you know, within the bubble, and because you want to stay on the cocktail circuit, you know, saying that, you know, Joe Biden is the greatest thing. This version of Joe Biden.
I see your point.
Joe Biden ever.
That you make a good point.
You're wrong.
No. Except, I said what I said in order to say this.
Yes.
And that is, I'm beginning to see the same thing with Republicans.
Yes.
You know, people just, I have neighbors, again, this is personal, anecdotal, but who will tell me on the side, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for whoever's running as a Republican against the Democrat. Republicans have lost the culture. Republicans, conservatives have lost the university. Conservatives have lost, we've lost the culture.
Really the university. But I think, you know, we certainly, right, and this is, again, by design, coming back to what we've been talking about the transformation of America and the Marxist dialectic, right? It is by design that between 1970, 1968, 67, and 2024, there has been a concerted effort to tear at every single institution.
It's true, but the virus went viral. In 2016,
I'm not so sure it was in 2016. I think it was,
well, the second half of the Obama administration, certainly.
I think what happened is
maybe that was it.
Is in the end, right? Well, right. The accelerator was hit when when Barack Obama was given a second term. Because that would take it back to 2012.
Yeah. When it jumped, it was always a disease. In academia, in Hollywood, in the unions, but it jumped.
What happened, Jerry, is that the efforts to sow that, right? Donald Trump became the perfect vessel for the left to instill all of its anger and ire, and you know, because Donald Trump was a reaction to 30
Obama.
Years. Well, he was a reaction to Obama, but I think he was a reaction also 30 years. Of the Republicrats in DC, you know, the establishment taking sway and holding on to power.
I guess, I mean, we're going to do a whole show on that. I think that Barack Obama and Donald Trump are two sides of the same coin.
Maybe
the narcissism, the me, it's all, you know, look.
But Jerry, but keep in mind, right, that Barack Obama is a manufactured candidate. Right. Barack Obama is the end result of, at that point in time, so 2008, so 40 years of the concerted effort by the left to remake America. You think about Obama's roots, and I'm not talking about the stuff about madrasas in Indonesia and whatever. I'm talking about, again, Bernadine Dorn and
domestic terrorists.
Coming out of that community, so-called community service school, and liberation theology and all of those things. You know, Barack Obama was the end result of 40 years of transformation of,
you know, it's interesting about Obama. And I think maybe that second term was when the U.S. jumped the shark.
Sure.
I'm not sure if we can make our way back. I'm a despairing optimist, but the more I see, the more I look, let me make this point, yeah, to make this next point. So Barack Obama in his second term allowed for a UN security vote that said the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, and was occupied territory.
Yes.
Was illegal occupied. The Western Wall.
Yes.
In Jerusalem.
The
Second Temple is occupied territory.
Yeah.
Illegal.
Yeah.
This is Obama did this.
Right.
I think that
despite the fact that by its very definition, it's not occupied territory.
I know, but
it was. But go ahead.
Yeah, I know, but this is the derangement on the left, because it's religion for them. It's not facts. It's not, we want to argue facts and data, science. They, for them, it's religion.
Right.
For them, it's they accept these things on faith. But let me just again make this point. And so I am forced to, because I'm a real clear person. I read everything every day. I get up at 5 a.m. and I'm going through everything. I'll spend most of this.
Jerry and I could trade text messages at 6:45 in the morning about articles that are behind paywalls.
Yes, that's right. But and I'll read things tonight and that sort of thing. It is so disheartening to see what the mainstream media and what I thought was at one point the responsible liberal left. So some of the headlines today, Republicans taking advantage of rape culture.
Yeah.
Because of the George Stephanopoulos pushback.
Yes.
No, it's the opposite.
Exactly.
George Stephanopoulos leveraged rape with Nancy Mace and wanted to shame her as a rape victim. How could you support this man?
Well, it's like,
but the left turns it around as if it's Mace who's leveraging rape.
Right.
This is how, again, this is Orwellian in real time.
It's trotting out pro Second Amendment activists whose families may have been the victim of gun violence or had some kind of gun tragedy in their lives. And saying, well, how can you, your family is, Jerry, it's a corollary to the,
you know,
as a Jew, anti-Zionist argument.
What I would like to do, because I think our audience is informed. Nonetheless, I'd like to come up with a quiz. True or false? True or false? Is the gun manufacturing sector in America the only sector shielded from liability laws?
The answer is no.
But Joe Biden in Pennsylvania just a couple, 3 days ago said, can you believe this?
But
the gun manufacturers, you can't sue them.
That's the thing is that, you know, again, you talk about the double standards of media, right? Which is this idea of, you know, if Donald Trump told half the lies that Joe Biden did, right? Or if the media held Joe Biden,
I get you, but here's the thing though, because look, I understand. All right, but just real quick, the 2020 election, there were voting issues in the election.
Right.
It's just true.
Why we want to have
all right,
yes.
But the fact of the matter is, whenever, like, for instance, Matt Whatley, Michael Whatley, the new RNC chairperson, he was I was listening to NPR, and the reporter said, an election denier, even though he lied about election interference, even though he spread falsehoods on the 2020 election, Michael Whatley is the incoming RNC chairperson.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, right after that report, they did a report on, Joe Biden in Pennsylvania, and they did a clip of Joe Biden saying, hey, can you believe the gun manufacturers are the only sector in America? But the reporter didn't say Joe Biden giving a false statement.
Right. Well, every time Joe Biden repeats this trope,
right,
you couldn't own a camera.
But you can't report on Michael Whatley without saying he falsely promoted Well, Joe Biden falsely promotes that inflation is better, that the economy is better, right, that gun manufacturers can't be sued, that price controls on drug on innovative drugs is a good thing. This is, again.
Remember you go back to Scotty Hughes back in 2016. There's no such things as facts anymore, and she was pilloried for.
Well, no, who said alternative facts? It was
what?
No, alternative facts was Kellyanne.
Yeah. Well, it's the
and
same
she thing. Was she was mocked for that.
We need to get her on the show, Jerry. That's where we ought to go next for all this. Yeah, but see, here's why I am obviously deeply concerned. You are correct. We've had the last 50 years in which all of these institutions have been torn apart. You can't come together. It's impossible to come together in America if people don't think that America is the greatest nation on earth. If we can't agree that the values upon which this nation was founded were good values. Anyway, but then I come back to the fact that there are these moments in time, again, where folks are recognizing that the emperor has no clothes. You know, parents coming out and saying, yeah, you know something? While I may have thought, years ago that it makes, we want to be nice and kind and show grace to people. And if a boy wants to think that he's a girl wants to think that she's a boy, well, then what do I care? But in the end, now they're saying, oh my God, this means that you're going to have a boy assaulting my daughter on the basketball court or on the volleyball court or, the changing room things or what have you. That's how these movements start. Or my kids are getting filled with all of this pornographic material and they're elementary schools. You got the husband of the transportation secretary having kids swear allegiance to the gay pride flag, but folks are recognizing and they're starting to push back. The problem is it too late? I don't think it's too late. But I think it's going to be a very long and hard road between now.
Perhaps, but remember what they have that we don't have,
which is the media.
Well, yes, they have the media, but they have the public schools and the universities.
Right.
And our children, this is why they're grooming our children. This is why in most public schools, and I say most, children can't read at grade level. They can't do math at grade level. But they can tell you about critical race theory, and they can tell you about gender
racism,
identity politics.
They can tell you that,
right. But they can't do math.
No. But this is why parents getting involved and running for school boards and pushing back, and why it's so important that they're doing this.
You saw the interview. The Moms for Liberty person was on MSNBC and then was on 60 Minutes. She was berated.
Right.
She was lied to and lied about. They made a mockery of her.
That was just put out by somebody about Moms for Liberty, whatever it's called, imploding. I don't know.
Yes.
Or not. But the point is, even if it is imploding, this is being driven by the relentless assault by the media on moms.
But again, my point is that why would a normal person want to get themselves involved when they can be ruined at work, when they could be mocked and they could be sued and they could be canceled, they could be arrested? Think about it for a second. There are pro-life advocates in America who have been arrested by this administration's Department of Justice. The feds have arrested people for silently and peacefully praying outside of abortion clinics.
Or more to the point, Jerry, back to your original point about flipping the script on these narratives and the provocation that happens, a pro-life activist son is being berated and almost physically assaulted by a pro-abortion, pro-death activist. And the father steps in there to protect the son. The father is first charged with assault, those charges are dropped, and then the Biden administration takes it upon themselves to arrest this guy.
Well, not just arrest him, they raided his home.
Right, yes.
With dozens of agents with guns drawn.
Right.
During breakfast when he's there with his wife, and I think he has 6 or 7 kids. How irresponsible is Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice and the FBI when they literally invade people's homes during breakfast hour.
But it's not a question of it being irresponsible, Jerry. It is calculated. It's done to silence and intimidate, right? The whole point is it's supposed to send a message.
No, I've often thought about this.
Let me finish my point real quick, Jerry. The pro-life activists who are arrested, for protesting silently in an abortion clinic, they're arrested. This guy has a SWAT team raid, a federal SWAT team raid his house. The point is, it's supposed to send a message. The Steve Baker, the reporter for The Blaze, who got arrested for reporting on January 6th, it's supposed to send a message. I've literally been talking about this. This is a good segue. The FCC has proposed scorecards for radio. Let me tell the story for a second, because I've been talking about this. The FCC has proposed scorecards, DEI scorecards for major radio and television companies. And, you know, there are all kinds of reasons why this happens. But part of it is, and let me ask you, Jerry, if this sounds familiar. You're a major media company in New York, and you own a whole bunch of TV stations, but you own only two radio stations, one of which is a conservative talk station. And all of a sudden, you're being scored on your DEI ratings in terms of your hires. What message do you think this sends to this major corporation in New York about their conservative talk station in a major city, let's say Baltimore? Do you think that this is going to have an impact on hiring? Do you think it's going to have an impact on editorial outlook? By the way, in the same city where the only TV station to actually report on what's going on politically had an FCC complaint filed against them by the state's attorney. Anyway, I'm sorry. Does that station sound familiar to you at all, Jerry?
It does, but this is why, you know, Real Clear Media just awarded Matt Taibbi, Miranda Devine from the New York Post, and Dr. J.
Dr. J. I love him.
No, I can't. J. Bettisheri. I'll get his name right. But regardless, what's called the Samizdat Award.
Oh, very, very nice. Excellent.
Because, and again, just for some background, because this is what we're moving towards, Andrew, to your point. We're moving to a point where we're going to have to go underground.
Yes.
This is like the bad old Soviet days where you had to have clandestine copying and distribution of ideas because state media wouldn't allow for it.
Right.
Look, you mentioned that reporter from Blaze TV.
I'm hoping the Kriebel Foundation is funding this award, Jerry, but go ahead.
The Blaze TV. What was the gentleman's name?
Steve Baker.
Steve Baker. Steve Baker was arrested 3 years after for his reporting. And the reason given by the feds, according to Baker himself, I haven't seen a long report yet on his arrest, but
I interviewed him last week. Go ahead.
All right. So he did say after he was released from federal custody, he was put in leg chains and handcuffs, treated like a terrorist.
Oh, and by the way, they suggested that he show up in shorts and flip-flops to make it easier for them, but it's all, you know, but deep down inside, he knew, no, if he shows up in shorts and flip-flops, the media is going to make it out like he's not taking this seriously. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, he talked about how in his interview with the feds that it was because he was sympathetic to the protesters.
Right.
This is why he was arrested.
Sure.
It was absolutely he wasn't arrested for being there. He wasn't arrested, I don't think, for even going inside. Although, and there were other journalists inside, by the way.
Right.
He was arrested for being sympathetic to the protesters.
Right.
Now, I think about this all the time, Andrew. You have two daughters, a house, you have a job and jobs and responsibilities. I have a house, I have five kids, I'm married, you know, we have responsibilities. You and I seriously considered going to the J6 rally to do a podcast.
That's right.
Now, if we had done that, what would have happened to us?
That's exactly it.
Therefore, I ask you the question. If a similar event happens in the near future, a Trump rally during a Senate hearing or something that's... Yeah, you know, I mean, are you and I going to say, you know what? Let's go down there and interview. Let's go down. Are we?
Not.
Right. So they've. So you see, this is my point. They've already won. There's already a chilling effect when you're on the radio, And your program director says, look, I don't want to tell you what to say, but man, how you're saying it is, well, again, it's a chilling effect.
100%.
And, exactly right. And so the we're moving.
Gary, but it's not as though, in fact, you know something? I'm going to bring up this, you and I have talked about this, the counterfactual. Imagine the hue and cry in the media. If there was a progressive talk radio host going on and on about, let's say, some hot button issue that a red state governor, it's a progressive journalist in a red state on the radio, and he is going on and on about some issue that he doesn't like what the governor is doing, and he's raising a criticism of what this red state governor is doing, and that communication staff of that red state governor called the program director of that progressive station to complain, what would that progressive station do? There would be a massive hue and a cry about how inappropriate it is for that red state governor, that Republican governor, to do that. It's an affront to free speech, right? Because he's reporting the truth. And yet, I have heard of, Jerry, I've heard of instances in which blue state governors have complained to program directors on conservative stations.
And again, it goes to my worry that we're just moving closer and closer to where if you have a contrarian viewpoint, look, you're going to have to go underground. Look what they did to Donald Trump. All right.
What did Donald Trump?
Lawfare. They moved statute of limitations so they could try him civilly on issues that he was cleared in criminal court. The 91 counts, the four indictments, every count, every indictment is bogus. Right. It's not lawful. You have the Manhattan district attorney going after him for breaking federal law that the federal elections commission says he didn't break.
Yes.
But the local prosecutor says no, he did break federal law. Except the federal commission in charge of it said no, he didn't. But he's being tried for that. Right. You had this ridiculous thing with the banks that allegedly
all of the things they've done to Donald Trump.
I know, but my point is, I don't think people understand that the Trump is a jerk, but he's right on all these issues.
The point that I made in my panel a couple of weeks ago, right? And it gets into the Henry Silverglade theory about the three felonies a day. We have about 1 million or 1.5 million separate federal regulatory mandates on the books. What it means is that the feds can come after you for anything. Any one of us can be Donald Trump, and the rest of us, what we don't have is, well, certainly Donald Trump has $500 million less than.
Again, this could happen to the average person. Remember Bridgegate?
Yes.
Absolutely. So Bridgegate, you know, the Obama Justice Department did not like the fact that Chris Christie was popular at the time. Believe it or not, Chris Christie was someone everyone believed could beat Obama in 2012. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't run. And so they created Bridgegate, where they said that the blocking of lanes was against this federal statute. And of course, the governor wasn't held accountable. But a single mother of four children was, and she was convicted, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. 10 years of her life,
right,
gone, because the Obama administration wanted to use lawfare. Now she was cleared, eventually by the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that the federal statute did not apply.
Yes.
And they're doing the same thing right now to Donald Trump.
It's what they did to Bob McDonnell.
Yes.
Rising star in the GOP who will never run again. Hey, Jerry, listen, because we're running short on time
here. Let's go.
Just want to commend everybody. I just finished watching the two seasons of Jericho, which was a CBS show from the early 2000s before Barack Obama became president. I'll talk about this more later on, because I want to, you know, it gets into this issue about the debates about culture. Actually, Jerry, I think it very much does get into your issue about the election of Barack Obama changing things, and especially in Obama's second term, because it is a very pro-America, pro-conservative values show, pro-limited government show, government skeptical show. that only lasted two seasons, was a precursor to the Tea Party movement. It's interesting stuff. Jerry, you're on the air on Sunday.
I'm not on the air on Sunday. No. I will be in New York City for St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. Oh my God. I keep forgetting this weekend. Oh, and you can expect video, ladies and gentlemen, maybe some audio as well, because I'm finally going to be accompanying Jerry Rogers to McLean Avenue in Yonkers the weekend after St. Patrick's Day. It happens to be 2 days after my birthday, Jerry.
Yes.
So the weekend of the 23rd, I actually have ordered a new shirt. I will be kilted, as you have requested, for this. But we're very excited for that. So stay tuned there. So have fun, Jerry, in New Jersey and New York for St. Patrick's Day. What do you want folks to do?
Well, the only thing we can do, and that is find the truth, and it's becoming more and more difficult to plant your feet, stand your ground, stay firm. God bless you.
Stand firm, everybody. Have a good week, everybody. Have fun, and please stay safe.